The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
It's at times like this, times that we've had since last October, that this programme has sadly missed Robert Fisk. For decades, Robert was our trusted correspondent on Middle Eastern affairs on this programme, a regular contributor when he was at home here in Ireland or when he was in Lebanon or in other parts of the Middle East. There is, though, a new book by Robert Fisk available in the shops at present. It's called Night of Power, Betrayal of the Middle East. And to tell us how that book came about, we are joined by his widow, Nellyfer Pazira Fisk. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Obviously, you miss Robert in a different way to us, in a much more serious way. How many years is it now?
3.5 years since his sudden death. And because it was so sudden, obviously, it feels that it's still unreal. But having his book has actually been something that I could focus on and give me a sense of purpose, obviously. But more importantly, that I could share his words with the world, because that's why he wanted to write this book. And he just loved doing that, you know, going back into history and reflecting upon what happened and giving a sense of perspective, a kind of a sense of perspective that I think we're desperately need right now.
How advanced had he been in the book before his sudden and untimely death?
He started the last chapter. So in fact, where I pick up in the book, which is a postscript, I do start with the two last paragraph of the last chapter that he had written before he went to the hospital.
And the work that he had done, how much revision and editing was required by you and others of it?
Well, I worked very closely with the publisher in the UK and the editor, and we had to go through, obviously, editing is a normal process for any book. For me, the intention was to make sure that Robert's, the integrity of his writing, which is quite a sharp prose, uncompromising choice of words, and his criticism, his analysis, all come true. So in the light of that, it took some time to edit, but it had to be carefully done. One of the other things that Robert could not stand was seeing mistakes in books. So the factual checking of all the dates and times and places. He had left a huge body of research for this book, which was organized in the library. So because we discussed the book intimately almost every day over breakfast, the book was our conversation and what he was going to do that morning. So because of that, the content I knew very well, but I still wanted to make sure that everything is correct and I did not want any cliches to slip into the book. So that's why it took a bit longer to get it out. But I am pleased that it's actually authentic and it's his work.
And tell us about how he collated the information and kept it at home, because my understanding is that he kept his work stretching back over decades, all his files, his briefing documents, his notes.
Absolutely. Robert was a born archivist. He'd organized everything. He kept everything. He would get up at 3 o'clock in the morning every morning, 2-3 o'clock in the morning. He would organize the research for the writing that morning, what he would do. And then it was filed exactly on the basis of how it would have been written for every page. So it made the process easier for me to go back to it as well and find the exact references. But he was quite meticulous in that way. And what really mattered to him and to me as well, that we worked so closely together, was that we did not want to make claims without any evidence. And as part of that research, as part of your work as a journalist, it is absolutely an imperative that you must provide evidence, you know, because otherwise it's so easy nowadays, especially with the social media, that people could make outrageous claims about things, but there are very few times the backing is offered. So that's why I set Robert's work so much aside, and he was very, very dedicated to the process of organizing. And so even without him, I could go back and verify all those facts and details.
But would it be also fair to say that Robert was not the type of journalist who said, well, one side says this, the other side says that, that Robert made decisions as to whom he believed and who could prove their contentions, and then very passionately argued his findings.
Yes, I was going to just mention the example. I was thinking about this last night watching the news. Why is it that we get numbers of death and casualties from a certain war, let's say in Ukraine, and it's reported without a question? We take it at face value. We never dispute the claims that are made by the Ukrainian government or the army. And Robert would have agreed with that, okay? Because they are not the ones who are invading a country. It's the Russians. We never actually print the Russian statement next to it. But the question mark is that why do we do that when it comes to the question of Israel and Palestine? That all the media, mainstream media, take such pain that the moment they mention the number of 29 deaths in a refugee camp in Gaza or the number of starving children in Gaza, but the immediate next statement is that the IDF denies it. And one of the statements that has become almost so painful to tolerate is that the IDF is going to investigate. Robert would have never tolerated that. He would have gone with the number of civilians because they're defenseless. He would have gone with the number of children that were affected by this war. And he would have never given the same amount of time to the Israeli statements and to the politicians. And I actually believe that partially it's the 50-50 coverage. A lot of the mainstream media, for whatever reasons they may have, they hide behind the cloak of balanced reporting. But I don't think that's actually correct. And I think this is why Robert had lived in the Middle East long enough. And before that, he had actually had experience of covering the war in Northern Ireland, which set him on the principles where he learned to speak up against the power. He spoke for against the injustices that he watched. And he believed that the only way reporters can help people understand and pass on information is by telling them accurately and exactly what they're seeing.
For all of that interest in bringing accurate information, how much did he emotionally get caught up in what he was writing as well?
Which was actually interesting. And I learned that quite early on in our lives together because we went to the front lines together from the time of the war in Iraq and then onwards, all the uprisings in the Middle East and then, of course, the war in Syria. Robert used writing as a method to channel whatever emotions he felt. So he wrote, and he would say to me, I feel angry that why these school children have been killed in this shelling. They don't deserve to die. They have nothing to do with this war that is being fought. And he would write that story as powerfully. And when that was over, he would file the piece, and then he will turn and say, we just have to fight the good fight and then on to the next day. So he didn't really get caught up in it. He felt, you know, this is something that happens and it's my job to tell the people. And he also took a lot of time to investigate. He didn't accept things at face value. We would go to these scenes of battlefields and he would collect the debris from the battlefields. He collected spent bullets, codings of missiles to try to trace it back to the weapon manufacturers because he wanted to understand who is actually benefiting from a war. We forget when there is a war, the superficial understanding is it's either a war for heroism, like the situation in Ukraine, for independence, or it's a war of resistance. But at the end of the day, war is a destruction of human spirit. It destroys societies. It destroys individuals. And because both Robert and I very much believed in the fact that wars are horrible, and the hope was we shared this belief in common that one day maybe future generations would be appalled by it and they will stop it. So he wanted to report and his emotions came across and he never tried to hide it.
This is obviously going to ask you to involve yourself in speculation, but how do you think he would have reacted to first the Russian invasion of Ukraine and then subsequently what Hamas did in Israel on the 7th of October and the response that we've had from Israel since?
Well, look, I mean, a speculation or not, I'm not speaking for Robert and I would not make a claim, but we were closely enough, shared the same politics, so I can say this to you. With quite clarity that, first of all, Robert would have never supported the Russian invasion of Ukraine. In fact, in 2014, when Russia took over Crimea, Robert wrote a very strong piece saying that the West is sacrificing Ukraine for the sake of balancing out whatever mistakes they have been making in Iraq. So he would have been against it. In terms of Hamas attack, he would have equally condemned it. Robert never was never an apologetic for any organizations or groups that use violence for any cause. And he would have equally condemned the behavior of IDF, the Israeli military, and the current Israeli government. But he would have also strongly called out the American role in the war in Israel by trying to protect its allies and giving credence to a starvation of a population and trying to ignore the war crimes that are happening in that country, in Gaza Strip.
And to understand what's happening now, how useful might this book, Night of Power, be, The Betrayal of the Middle East?
Well, because the book is so relevant in terms of, unfortunately, of what's happening in the Middle East. Robert did not. He used to have a joke with people saying, look, I don't predict the future. But there is a chapter in the book, which I've edited, that talks about how the new forms of warfare that does not stop to protect civilians, which is what we see in Gaza, is setting a very dangerous precedent in the world. He also asked a very important question about in the future, that what do we think about wars and why do we justify them? So the book is relevant. There are parts of the book, especially the three chapters on Israel and Palestine, it reads as if like he's reporting right now, because as we all know, that conflict did not start yesterday, and Robert was closely involved in reporting it. So one is political analysis, is historical analysis, is far more relevant in understanding the context of that war. And then secondly, the questions that he raised are the questions we haven't started to ask yet. Those are the questions we must start to ask if we want a peaceful solution for this conflict in the Middle East.
But the betrayal of the Middle East, how much of it can be put down to the influence of outsiders, and how much blame also then goes to the people of the Middle East themselves for who they allow to take power on their behalf?
Yes, I think that's a very good question. And Robert would be pleased that you asked this question, because betrayal of the Middle East that he talks about is in part due to the interference of the Americans in the Middle East. Wherever they have gone, they have brought a lot of devastation. But he also equally accuses the Middle Eastern governments. And look across the map. We do not have a single democracy in that region, okay? They're all either dictators, ayatollahs, in the case of Iran, or they're monarchies. So the people in the Middle East are trapped in a prison that, unfortunately, these governments and these politicians in the region are as equally responsible, not just in terms of the betrayal of their own people, but also even in terms of what we see politically happening in Gaza right now. We can talk about the Israeli brutal behavior. We can talk about war crimes. We must. We should. We can also talk about the Americans' unfortunate role in this war, and the Brits and also Germany. But at the same time, there is a deaf silence about the role of the dictators of the Middle East that are playing in being complacent in the, what's happening in Gaza. And it's not really covered in the media so much. So Robert would have very much called out both. And I think why this book is so relevant, because there is a chapter about torture chambers in the Middle East that is about the horrors of what the people and the population within those borders endure.
Nellyfer Pazira-Fisk, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us about Night of Power, Betrayal of the Middle East, the last work of Robert Fisk, published posthumously. And as I said at the very start, we do miss him. We do miss the valuable contributions he made to The Last Word over the years. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper, weekdays from 4:30. Today.